Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Happy New Year, everyone. It's a new year. Do you believe it, Austin Bechtel? 2025 is here.
Hard to believe, Bob.
It's hard to believe. As you get older, it's harder to believe because things go faster. You may or may not believe that, but believe me, it does. And when it does, that means you got to enjoy every day. And as I tweeted out last night, my wish to all of you is health. It's the best thing you can hope for because if you are healthy, then you are a rich person. Everything else that follows is fine, except you got to start there. And on top of that, I want to give a special shout out to Stacy Hurt. Stacy is a wonderful young woman who has gone through her share of cancer battles. Was once diagnosed with a stage 4, but she's now totally cancer-free. Never lost her faith, never lost her attitude. Faith and attitude are very big. And I wanted to start there because I think that's a good way to start. On a positive story for someone who fought hard and won the race so far, and we continue to pray for Stacy Hurt. But anyway, 412-928-9370 is the number to call. We're here until 2 o'clock. Austin and I. Joe is golfing. Where is Joe?
I think he's just enjoying his holiday.
He is golfing, though. He's at some simulator somewhere. I know him, and he's probably trying to work on his game because every time he's in there, you see him. You see a mirror, you see Joe trying to figure out what that backswing looks like. But that's good. That's what makes him a very improved golfer in just the short time he's been playing. 2025, Austin, this year is the U.S. Open. Also, it's coming up. I would love to go.
I know Joe and I want to go and see if maybe the Bob connections can help us out in this regard.
Well, I'm assuming the fan will be there in one way or another, right, as a media.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you got to do that. 240,000 people expected there, and it's going to be something special with the changes that Oakmont Country Club has made. I know Pat Bostic, an avid golfer himself, and a very good one, by the way. I have to get on the course with him and try to figure out how close I am to him. I don't think I'm very close, but we're going to find out one day. But he had John Lynch on, and John is the president of Oakmont, really an outstanding person and a good guy to take control of the situation here from an Oakmont point of view when the USGA comes in. It's going to be spectacular. But we begin here today, and first I should remind you that the fan Twitter site is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the fan hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. The text line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless they get money for you. And that number, by the way, is the same as a call-in number, which is 412-928-9370. We will talk a lot of Steelers throughout the course of the day, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. And last night, news-wise, it was Penn State. Starting fast and then kind of hit a little road bump, allowed Boise State to get back in. And quite frankly, Boise State missed so many opportunities. Their kicker, I don't know what that first kick was like. It was awful. It was a duck hook like I've never seen. And then the second one, when you have trips and long drives, they had a 12 and 13 play drive in the second half and they produced 0 points. Against a team like Penn State, you got to cash in when you can. They did not, Austin. And do you mind if I call you Austin throughout the course of this
show?
That
works for me.
Or do you prefer City Limits? Because I know Joe comes up with all sorts.
Bob, whatever you prefer is good with me.
No, it's what you prefer.
Austin works.
Okay. they had their chances, is what I'm trying to say, Austin. Right?
No doubt about it.
They had their chances, and they could not. Penn State did a great job on Ashton Jeanty. He was not a factor, even though he, I think, went over 100 yards. If he did, just barely. But it was a group effort to focus on him and put the pressure on their quarterback, who I thought missed a lot of targets that he could have made. But Penn State did what they had to do, and it confirms what I think we all thought. They had an easier trek to the Final Four of college football playoff, and they're the first to arrive.
So Jeanty rushed for over 125 yards in every single game this year, including against Oregon. And, I mean, they kept him in check, and that was going to be a critical part of this game. Stop the run and let Boise beat you with the pass. And Jeanty fumbled twice. He had previously fumbled twice in the entirety of the season. You miss two field goals. You don't score on a long drive. Boise really shot themselves in the foot. But Penn State, with the way that they came out and asserted themselves on those first two drives scoring touchdowns, really put the pressure on Boise. And I think really made them kind of squirmish for a large portion of the game. But yeah, these were the two games that going into it, everybody said, James Franklin should win these games, and if he doesn't, it's a significant disappointment because they're favored by 11 against Boise. They're favored by 9 against SMU. This is when the rubber meets the road now against Notre Dame or Georgia. This is where James Franklin will truly be defined.
Yes, I will say one thing about anyone who watched that game. If you're Georgia or Notre Dame, you should come away thinking our best bet is to blitz the hell out of Penn State.
Yes.
Because Boise State had success again. I don't know how many times they sacked him last night. They were in the backfield quite a bit. Now it's a risk-reward situation. Drew Aller made some nice throws, and of course, whenever you have a guy like Tyler Warren on the other side of it, taking advantage of all of his 6 feet, 6 inches, it's tough to defend it no matter how good you are defensively. However, when you blitz, you cause havoc. You cause down and distance to change. I think a team like Georgia or Notre Dame will be better suited to do it, knowing that they have better back-end help. I thought Boise State was a team that could be had down the field. Maybe one of the reasons why they decided to blitz as much as they did, just to try to confuse him, make him make errant throws. He made three pretty good throws on the touchdowns. But I would definitely, if I were one of those two teams, whoever advances, do that against them.
And Drew Aller had a pretty good day. It would help if his receivers could, I don't know, catch the ball, make a couple good contested catches. Other than Tyler Warren, who did so in the end zone and a couple other different plays, the receivers kind of let them down, and they still found a way to win by, what, double digits? So their right guard had three different penalties, a face mask, a couple holdings. They blocked very well in the run game. Singleton and Allen both had pretty good days. But yeah, if you blitz and you have to force Aller outside the pocket, he can make plays, but that's the way to beat him. Bring an extra guy off the edge.
No question about it. And so now you'll watch today as Notre Dame and Georgia play. That's the late game of the day. The one that's most intriguing is Ohio State, and Ryan Day finds himself in the same position as James Franklin as far as the, you know, the court of public opinion. People out there want and demand a lot. If you don't beat Michigan, then you better run the table here and get to a national championship and win it. And I think those are the expectations now. And I think they will beat Oregon.
I do too.
I think they're a better team than Oregon. I think Oregon has maybe better skilled players. But overall, Ohio State, and they played earlier this year, I think they're going to come away with a win. And the other one, I see it as Texas. They're just too powerful. Arizona State's a good team that played well. A lot of transfers. And that's fine. They utilize that system. That's what Pitt needs to do. They need to look at how they orchestrated their team and go out and be aggressive in that, but it takes money to do that. So I think Texas will advance. I think Ohio State will advance. And on the one tonight that's interesting, I believe you're going to probably see Georgia, although I think Notre Dame is perfectly capable of winning that game if things go right for them.
So if you were Penn State, who would you rather play? Notre Dame or a Georgia team without Carson Beck?
That's the thing. I'm not sure. I haven't watched enough of their backup quarterback in action to know what he can do.
He came back to beat Texas in the SEC championship.
I understand that. But I haven't seen enough to think that he's, you know, capable of doing that for an entire game when he is the guy in charge. Carson Beck, up and down. But, I mean, when he's on, he's on. He's not going to be there. So, I don't know. I think I probably would rather play Notre Dame still. I think they have a better chance lining up against Notre Dame.
Yeah, Dom and I were talking about that after the morning show. I think I'd still take Notre Dame just because I think it's Georgia, and that should carry enough weight in its own. And I wonder just about the battle in the trenches. And because that's where Penn State gets beat typically. It's where they got beat against Oregon, and it's where they got beat against Ohio State. So going up against Georgia is not going to be an easy task. It won't be easy against Notre Dame either. But I feel like it's a more even matchup against Notre Dame. I think Texas handles Arizona State, not easily, but pretty much like what we saw last night. And Ohio State beats Oregon. I think they get their revenge, and Will Howard does not slide with a second left.
Now, based on the first five games that we've seen here, they haven't been necessarily close games. Does that change your opinion of the college football playoff, or do you still think this is the right amount of teams? I think the seeding needs to be rethought. But overall, your thoughts?
Not at all. My thoughts on it doesn't change at all. I originally wanted 8 teams. Now, when you go to 12, you wonder, is it going to be too oversaturated? The results of the games have definitely made me think that way. But I also think at the same time, this is the first year for it. This is the test run. This is the trial run. They're not going to eliminate teams now that have gone to 12. They're not going to go backwards. Like, do you think the NFL is ever going to go back to 6 playoff teams or Major League Baseball to 4 playoff teams?
Or the NHL. Everybody goes forward. They want more money, more matchups, more postseason activity. Yeah.
So they're not going to go back. I think with 12, you just reseed it so that conference champs like Arizona State and Boise, who are, what, double-digit underdogs, are not teams that are playing with a first-round bye in that second game. They would have to play, maybe they even host in the first round. But no, I like the system the way it is. I changed the seeding, but I'm fine with the 12 teams. I think this has been entertaining. I know the games haven't been necessarily close. Maybe it's just that it's the first year of this, and it's a whole new thing, and there's this whole big flair around it. But I don't expect next year's game to be this big of blowouts in all of them.
No, I don't either. I think there's some pretty good teams in there. I know Alabama, a lot of people down there were chirping they should have been in. Well, they go into their bowl game yesterday in Michigan, unranked at the time, beats them 19-13. 412-928-9370. If you have a comment about the college football playoff, let us know. Also, last night, the Penguins. I was going back and forth, and I recorded things. I'm sitting out like a crazy man on New Year's Eve. And that's the other thing about getting older, Austin. I used to go out. My wife and I would always go out. We'd stay out till 3 in the morning. We'd find after-hour places, dance places, whatever. And I'm still capable of that if I want to. But on a night with so much sports involved, and we had just come off a nice 3-day trip with our grandkids, and they can wear you out, you know. You need your energy consumption. So we stayed at home and watched. And I thought the Penguins played a pretty good game, but didn't get the result they needed as they lost 4-2 to Detroit. Again, this is a team that has to win these kinds of games. They've dug a deep enough hole for themselves that when you take on teams like Detroit, middle of the pack, talented but middle of the pack, you got to win. I thought Erik Karlsson took a costly penalty late. It led to a power play goal and then an empty net goal. But the Penguins have a tough road coming up. They're going to make that trip to Florida, and you got some pretty good teams. Tampa's one of the teams they're trailing right now. Tampa has, I think, 4 or 3 games in hand on them, and they're ahead of them in the points race. So you can't afford to just not get any points. It was 2-2 game late. They get a power play. They score. Game's over. No points.
They're going to have a string of 5 in a row at home, though. That could significantly help them. With the Oilers, Blue Jackets, they'll play Ottawa, Tampa Bay, and Seattle.
Okay, but let's go through that list. Oilers, not an easy game.
No, obviously not. Columbus, though.
Columbus is pesky, and they play the Penguins tough.
They do. I think you could take them. Ottawa, they've had a pretty decent season.
Yeah, and the Penguins will beat them here. They could have done that there. And then after that, it's Tampa.
They sometimes find ways against Tampa at home to be able to beat them. But if again, it was on the road, maybe
to me,
not the same.
I would look at that as you got to win that game only because of the point differential and the games in hand that Tampa has. When you have head-to-head, you got to win them.
And then you need to take 2 points against Seattle.
Absolutely. But that won't be easy either, and it comes down to goaltending. The question, I think, moving forward at 412-928-9370 is their goaltending enough? Do they have enough right now? It's interesting yesterday that Nedeljkovic started a second straight game. I really thought that Jari was going to be that guy, and then Jari's not been his own best friend. He's played erratically still, and they need consistency out of him, of all their goaltenders. You can play a responsible brand of hockey, but if you give up a couple of bad goals here and there, it changes the outcome of the game. So this is going to be a critical stretch for the Penguins coming up, and they're going to need points here. And quite frankly, they played a better brand of hockey. Is it good enough to get them back in the playoffs? I know, I don't know about you, but I want to see them in a play. I want to see a series. We haven't seen one in a couple of years. I want to see what this group can do in a series. And I don't really care who the opposition is. Just show what you have 7 games. Figure it out. Win a series. Sort of like what the Steelers are in.
I don't think they're capable of winning a series, though. I think the Steelers could win a playoff game. I do. I still think they could, especially if they go to a Houston team that's reeling. But the Penguins, I still wonder about the goaltending, Bob. That's been my main problem with them for years because I don't trust Tristan Jarry down the stretch to either A, be healthy, or B, be effective once you reach the playoffs because we've never seen it with him. So that's my main concern with him. 5 goals against the Islanders, 4 against Nashville. I know they won it. And then wasn't good enough to win it against New Jersey before Christmas. I just want to see some consistent play for Jarry. Remember we were talking about how many shutouts he had last year, and we were still saying he wasn't playing well? Now he can't buy a shutout.
No, he can't. And I wonder what Kyle Dubas is going to do in this whole thing when it gets down to the trade deadline. And depending on where they are, because they have this road they're on right now, which is half of it is present, win now, because you have guys who are capable of, And then the next one is, well, we're trying to build for the future a little bit here. So the problem they have is trying to determine which way to go and who do you trade if you want to acquire something. Because they seem to be, at least Kyle Dubas seems to be, a general manager who's very well aware that he needs more in his system. He's acquired draft picks. I still think he wants to do that to the point where he brought in Kevin Hayes to get a second round pick. I'm just curious how he's going to handle this situation and who may trade. If he's interested, if he thinks Joel Blomquist is going to be the man moving forward in goal, then you can trade one of these goaltenders as long as you put somebody else in with it, if a team is willing to do it. But it's not an easy assignment at all. And again, their play will dictate where they go. 412-928-9370. Austin, we did a lot of calls yesterday. Want to keep it rolling today. Who we got?
Let's go to Rocky in Blonox.
Rocky, what's up? Happy New Year.
Hey, Bob. Happy New Year to you, man. I'm a little bit sore this morning. How are you?
Why are you sore? Is that information we should all know about, or is that personal?
No, I slept in my shed last night. It's a Scandinavian New Year's tradition. You sleep in a boat, and I have my kayak in my shed, so I slept in my boat.
Scandinavian? So wait a minute. Jason Mackey showed me something yesterday that I'd never heard of, which was a beer shower. He showers with a beer. Now, I've never done that. Because when I shower, it's normally early in the day, and I don't want to drink beer or anything else early in the day. So you're talking about a Scandinavian tradition of sleeping in a shed on a kayak.
Yeah. No, so you say a beer shower. Is that like a golden shower?
No. It's like drinking out a beer in a shower.
Oh. I've done that.
Well, if you slept in a pontoon in a shed on I imagine you've done a lot of things.
Does it bring you good luck?
We will find out. It's not a pontoon. I'm not a savage, Bob. It's a kayak.
Oh, you're hurting. I imagine you are a savage, but go ahead.
A little stiff. These Penguin goalies, Bob, you've been around Pittsburgh sports for, I don't want to say how many years.
Yeah, you can. It's 43. I'm proud of that. You know, 43 years of doing this.
Well, you started when you were two, right? If my math is mathing.
Well, the makeup's working if you believe that. Good.
So the goalies are terrible. I mean, these aren't even pressure games. When they get into any kind of game that matters, towards the end of the season, they're going to fold. They're going to fold like my grandma's patio chairs. You know what I mean?
Well, some of those patio chairs can be tough to fold because they have, you know, they're brittle. They don't conform the way they used to. So that could be difficult. But I do agree. I mean, it comes down to goaltending. Every team in the NHL is about goaltending. If you don't have good goaltending, no matter what your effort is in front of you, you're going to give up goals that you shouldn't be giving up. And when that happens, it has a demoralizing effect on your team. Conversely, when you get a goalie who's on a heater and he's playing well, it invigorates you, and you know you can do more things because he's the last line of defense and he's doing well back there. So that's it. Number one issue with them is consistency in goal. I tend to agree there, Rocky.
You're absolutely right, and I do wish the best for the Penguins, but I think it's time, Bob. Let's blow this thing up. Let's get Sid, ship him off somewhere where he can raise another cup, and send Malkin back to Russia and. Well, kind of go from there.
Be careful what you wish for with all that. I mean, I think Sidney Crosby's still playing a pretty good level. Thanks, Rocky. I appreciate it, and I hope you have a wonderful 2025, and I'll look into the Scandinavian shed night or whatever you want to call it. But anyway, Sidney Crosby's going to be here as long as he wants to be here, and I still think he believes his team can do some things, and you're tied down with the rest of them. You really can't do much unless they agree to it all. I don't want to see that right now. I want to see them. The stated goal was to get into the postseason and see what you can do. I've seen strange things happen in best of sevens. Austin, it's the one sport where you could be an 8 seed, get hot, and win it all. We've seen it repeatedly, and you don't see that in sports very often.
No, I mean, you really don't. The NHL is really the main place you see it. I mean, maybe the 05 Steelers, but that was kind of a different case regarding how they got in. Hockey is just, I mean, we saw it, just a couple of years ago with Carolina, right?
Well, how about the St. Louis Blues when they were dead last in February in the conference? They make a coaching change, bring in Craig Berube, get a young goaltender who went hot, and they win a cup. And no one, the odds on that at that time probably were 1,000,000 to 1 that they would win a Stanley
Cup. Yeah, I remember the year that Washington, the Nationals, went all the way to the World Series after starting the year. At one point, they were like 9 games under .500 in the middle of May, at the beginning of June. So, I mean, it is possible to start the way that the Penguins started and be able to roll yourself into a prime position in the playoffs. But at the same time, I wonder if this roster construction, because the D pair is banged up now. I mean, Erik Karlsson one night looks like a Hall of Famer. One night you wonder if he should be even in your final defense pairings. You know, so I still wonder about him. Get Letang back healthy. Figure out what you're going to do with Marcus Pedersen, because, I mean, are you going to re-sign Pedersen at this point?
He could be a trade guy. If you can't, you have to investigate this if you're Kyle Dubas. If you can't do that, then you have to figure out a way to get – and somebody would want him. But the problem with that is he's one of your best defensive defensemen. And if you're in it to try to get into the playoffs and win some series, you need him around probably. So
has P.O. Joseph looked good enough in his return to you?
I haven't seen enough of him to make me think yes yet. And I was scratching my head on that one as well. Unless it was just a body count, they needed somebody else, and he was available because he was falling out of favor in St. Louis. I don't know the reason behind that.
I wouldn't trade Drew O'Connor. I would want to keep him around and try to build off of him as much as possible. He's not a dependable, you know, forward on the top line or second line that you can – he can be your number one paired next to Crosby or Malkin. Still think he's a pretty decent piece you can keep around for maybe $3
million. Well, he needed – last night, he hadn't scored in 32 games.
No.
And he had two goals last night, both of them for the Penguins. And that was good for him because he works hard. He's an honest player. I think that's – you hear a lot of that in hockey. You're an honest player. I'd like to hear more of that in football. He's an honest player, meaning you don't stop working just because you're not getting the puck or the ball or whatever. More honest players. He's a good player for them, and I don't know if he's a top-line player, but he certainly is somebody I still would like on my team. 412-928-9370 is the number to call. Austin and I are here until – what time are we here till?
We're here till 1:30.
1:30, and then we have a 30-minute pregame show. Pitt and Cal. How about that? In an ACC actual conference game. I think I heard Pat say the last time they met was in – Civic Arena back then when they were playing in the NCAA tournament. But Pitt is 10-2. We'll talk more about them as we go along. It's a team that can do some damage, I think. Mike DeCourcy was on with us yesterday, and he thinks they could be a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. I think they could actually do better with that, depending on health and depending on if they get an inside game going. Their guard play is really good, and we'll carry them through this.
So they start Atlantic Coast Conference play, Bob, the Atlantic Coast Conference against Cal and Stanford.
Well, you know, it's just, is that not the sign of the times?
I know. Then they have played Virginia Tech, so they are 1-0 in ACC play, but this is when it really ramps up. I'll give you a special treat. There's going to be a social video that's coming out with Ben Tenuta, me, and Starkey. We went down to Pitt basketball.
You know, I saw a little bit. Actually, I was not aware of it until yesterday. Mackie told me about it, and I went back and looked. And did I see correctly that he did a little fadeaway three, almost like a Dirk Nowitzki leg kick?
So it wasn't a three. It was, according to Joe.
But I mean, it was a Dirk Nowitzki kind of, I'm going to extend my leg so you can't get near me to block a shot.
Fadeaway backwards. Joe has continually made fun of me for my defense, which I think is fair. Because also, Joe has had Achilles injuries. I don't want to play too tough of defense on Joe because I don't want him to be injured. I did at one point poke him in the eye, not intentionally. So I was closing out on a shot. He blamed me for poking him in the eye. I closed out. My hand touched his hand, and his hand touched his eye, and he claimed that I poked him in the eye intentionally.
He's fragile. He's older. You got to understand how this works.
So, Bob, I was down 8-2 in the game and rallied back to win 17-14.
Again, that's a fatigue factor that sets in when you get up there in age. You took advantage of that. Not only did you poke him in the eye, you ran around. He didn't have the energy to compete. And as a young person, you took advantage of him.
I tried to.
That's called elder abuse.
I tried. Well,
that.
No.
That's what that is.
I was letting him win for a large portion of it, but he just could not hold on.
412-928-9370. So that'll be coming out later. We have a lot to get into. Want to hear from you. We have open lines until 1:30 today. We also have Jay Caulfield coming up at 11 o'clock. He'll be talking about the Penguins and where they are and where they need to go and what they need to do to get to where they want to go. 412-928-9370 is the number to call. When we come back, we're going to have a six-pack, which is brought to you by Bet365. That's coming up. And already Austin's got the beer going. So are you going to take a beer shower like Matthew?
No.
No, I wouldn't do that.
And
why would you do that? We're back right here in the cozy confines of 93.7 The Fan, Bob Pompiani, Austin Bechtel today. Joe is enjoying a vacation day. He'll be back on Friday. 412-928-9370. That's the number, 412-928-9370. Before we get to our six-pack, brought to you by Bet365. I just like hearing that sound, so I'm going to keep talking
about
that. I
know you do.
Let's go out to Greg in Youngstown, who is on the Fan hotline right now. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Bob. Happy New Year's.
You too.
City Limits. Hey, City Limits, you have his own show. He really deserves to have his own show on your network.
I complimented him 2 days ago, or when I was driving around, and I heard you, and very much in command. Yes,
thank you.
He's really good. Let me just make a point real quick. The way the season's going for the Steelers, and I read an article from Mark Madden. I think it's a Trib, and he made a good point. I mean, this is what I want to see. It's what a lot of fans want to see. If this doesn't go well, they have to part ways with Tomlin and Omar Khan. And then, like he was saying, don't sign Wilson, trade Pickens, trade Watt, move on, rebuild the team, try to get that coach of Detroit, and let's change this culture. Because if they go into next season the same way we went into this season at the end, we're gonna have 9 wins, maybe less, because Cincinnati's going to be a lot better next year. So if they think they're going to be better next year with the same way they're doing things, it's not going to work.
Well, I would also say, you know, I think before that all happens, number one, I think Omar's only in year number two here. That's not going to happen. He works well with Andy Weidel. I think, you know, both those guys have a lot of say in what goes on. And I think they've done some good things there. I also think they failed in a couple of things, just like most GMs do. What I will say, Greg, is I think, you know, over the years, the assistant coaches under Mike Tomlin are not as good as some of the others that we've seen around the league. And that's something that needs to change. I'm not sure why. My guess is that, you know, Mike Tomlin is the authority figure in that organization, and he sets the agenda. Sometimes, though, you got to go out and defer and get some people who can make a difference in your team and do it, you know, and have fresh ideas. I mean, you mentioned Ben Johnson. I really like what he's been able to do there now in a couple of years, and it looks like me like Dan Campbell gives him the reign to do pretty much as he is. We saw a hook and ladder play the other night in the San Francisco game. So that, you know, I don't think you're going to see change there, though, to be honest. They signed him to a three-year deal for that reason.
Bob, you remember 91 when Noel was at the end. He was at the end.
But that was a mutual thing. I think that was a mutual thing.
Well, I don't know about that one either. But, okay, you say one thing, I heard other things too. I think Rooney was fed up. So it when Cowher comes in, it brings a spark to that organization. I mean, that organization was dying at that point. It really was. And Cowher comes in, revitalizes this organization to where it's at now. And it's the same thing with Tomlin. I think the majority of the fans, probably 70% of them, don't want Tomlin anymore. Why doesn't Rooney listen to the fans? Why is he so
big-headed?
Well,
I mean, first of all, and thanks, Greg. You make some very interesting points. I know that. And what I'll say is that you're not going to listen to people who are more fanatics than anything else. And there are a lot of people out there who have that opinion. And I'm not saying that they could be wrong. What I'm saying is, generally speaking, people are not going to listen to what fans say. Should you have an ear and be mindful of what's going on? Sure. But, you know, this season isn't over. I'm going to remind you of that. This is still, even though it's 3 losses in a row, and I'm going to break down how bad those losses have been in a minute, but they still have a chance to win a game, get some momentum, and go on the road and win. And we'll see what happens then. I kind of liken it to what, you know, James Franklin's situation. Fans, fans, fans. Ryan Day, fans, fans. Fans are never satisfied. You can't listen to fans who are never satisfied. You just can't. You got to make what you think are the best decisions, and they could be wrong, but you got to make what you think is right. So with regard to Russell Wilson, you brought that up as well, and I want to talk a little bit about that. Because, Austin, we mentioned this yesterday. I am right now not committed to either quarterback at this point. I want to see more from Russell Wilson, and I certainly know that age is a factor in this. The Steelers are coming off a game in which they scored a season-low 10 points. It was their largest loss of 19. They've had 3 consecutive double-digit losses, and the last time that's happened, you'd have to go back to 1988. Double-digit losses. Now, you can argue in 2 of those games they were actually in it in the fourth quarter, and then things changed. But here's Russell Wilson's numbers, weeks 7 through 14, his first on the job when he went 6-1 versus the last 3 weeks. And again, you have to factor in the competition because you're dealing with some of the elite teams in the NFL. But if you pride yourself on being one of these teams or knocking on the door, you better win them. And they're 0-3 in those 3 games. They've only scored 13 points per game. They've given up 30, which is another problem right now. Passing yards only 155, turnover minus 2. And while I understand why coaches talk about turnovers, your defense has got to do more than just count on turnovers to make things happen. You cannot rely exclusively on turnovers as your base to make things happen on defense. Yes, weeks 7 through 14, Russell Wilson went 6-1. They scored 28 again. He defense allowed 9 fewer points. They were plus 10. My point here is that turnovers are fine, but there are going to be games where you don't give them. That doesn't mean you can't stop teams. You still have to figure out ways to limit what teams can do. And in the last three games, their defense, and I cite one example more than any, it was that fumble by Russell Wilson at the 4-yard line of Baltimore. That was a terrible play. It was on him. I understood what he was trying to do. The defense could have bailed him out there. They're at their own 4-yard line.
Yeah,
instead, they go 96
yards
for a touchdown. That's the you know, you talk about complementary football and why it's a problem. So these problems are not just quarterback related or offensive related. That's a big part of it. But the defense has to be a lot better.
The $130 million defense, I should add, Bob, the highest paid defense in all of football. That is having communication issues in week 17, which should not happen. One of the main crux for my argument on the quarterbacks, because I'm not sold on either of them as well, and I don't like the quarterback class that's coming out of the draft too, so you're in a really tough situation, is that Russell Wilson was brought here to win these types of games. Now, I'm not saying they should have won all three. I'm not even saying they should have won two. But at least win one of these three games against the teams that you try to compare yourself to. I'm sure internally they compare themselves to Philadelphia. They compare themselves to Kansas City. They sure as hell should compare themselves to Baltimore. They'd beaten them 8 out of the last 10 games. So yeah. Russell Wilson was brought here to win one, at least one of those games, to be the difference in one of those games. And he was the difference in the wrong way in the Baltimore game.
He was. And the pick six was his worst throw. And again, he's here to do that. That team wants to win now. It's much like the Penguins in many ways. They have to win now. They're doing it with veteran players. He was brought here for that reason. There's still a lot of football left. And this is why, when you analyze, I think, seasons and players, you can't have knee-jerk reactions every week. It's not a week-to-week thing. Look at the entire body of work. They started well. I think they knew they had to, given the schedule that would lie ahead in weeks 15, 16, and 17. But they failed in those weeks. You would like to have won at least one of those games, and they wouldn't be in this predicament they're in right now, which is they lost control of their destiny to win an AFC North championship. But again, if you come out in this game, you play well, you shut down Joe Burrow, defensively make some plays, next thing you know, the offense gets cranking. It's something positive to take into the first game, which is if you're going to be against Houston, that's probably the best. It's like Penn State taking on SMU or Boise State. That's the best way for you to start in this field right now, because I don't think you want to tangle with Baltimore. 412-928-9370. We have Seth on Long Island. Happy New Year, Seth. Thanks for calling in today.
Hey, Happy New Year, Bob. Happy New Year, Austin. Again, great show. Austin doing a hell of a job. Bob, I called in yesterday. I spoke to you guys yesterday. And, you know, the thing about a quarterback, right? So the other caller said he read that article from Mark Madden. I read it as well. I don't know if you go full rebuild, it's kind of what he was intimating. But the quarterback situation is untenable. And in the macro view, you know, you got to have a quarterback that's going to get you. A quarterback has to elevate the players around him, right? So if you look at all the years with Tom Brady, he elevated no names for the better part of his career. So we've got to get someone that can do that. I believe it's Justin Fields. I know there's a lot, you haven't seen a huge sample size from him, but I believe that it's and you can't go back to him now, right, going into the end of the season.
You could utilize him a little bit more, I think, though. You may not have to go back to him, but, right, I think you can utilize him.
Well, no question. And I think that they need to really take a hard look at that because, you know, yesterday you and Jason were talking about money as well. You know, Russ, he's not going to take a hometown discount to the extent that I think people think he will. I don't think he's worth 30 or 40. But, Justin Fields wants to start, right? He's a young dude. You know, get him out there, man. Would he start for $20 million? I think he might start for 15 to 20 to be the starter if he knew he was going to be the starter. So, that's my take. And the defense, again, the defense is a huge issue. We've got to correct that. So I appreciate the call, man.
Thank you, Seth. Appreciate that. We were talking defensively about how Brian Flores was here and no longer here. And, man, he has done wonderful work with the Minnesota Vikings, who find themselves in a winner-take-division and number one seed game on Sunday night against Detroit. It's hard to believe that you're going to have a 14-win team not in the top four positions of the NFC. They're going to be a 5 seed.
That is very strange.
That's crazy.
I wouldn't change the format based off of that. Remember the arguments that were always made about the 98-win Pirates having to play in a one-game wild card? And I'm glad they eventually made it a 3-game playoff. What would you do to change that? Like, if people were griping about it, I don't think there's anything you can do.
No, it's an anomaly. It happens once in a while, and this is one of them. And this division is loaded with good teams, not counting the Chicago Bears. That's one of the reasons why these teams have as many teams, because they feast on them. Just like New England for years feasted on all the East teams like Buffalo's doing now.
Yeah.
You know, and so with regard to Russell Wilson, I am not making any final decisions until I see everything play out. And we'll see. As far as Justin Fields, I think if I'm going to make a choice for the future, it would likely be him based on his age. And I think he's made strides here. And I think if he has some consistency in his corner as opposed to what he had in Chicago, you can see a difference there. So these are all topics are going to come up. Wide receiver topic is going to come up. I saw that Roman Wilson was activated yesterday.
How much
can he do at this point? I don't know. He certainly can't play this week. Could he play in the playoffs? Maybe. And will he make a difference? You never know. But he originally was the guy they were counting on to come in here, and then his whole season went down the drain. All right, we're going to go out to the fan hotline. George Michalowski, Pittsburgh Sports Now. He is here talking about Pitt today. And it's interesting, as we talked about here, George, that this is unusual and maybe a sign of the times that the ACC opener is – Pitt hosting Cal, followed by Stanford. The first two opponents are teams from way on the other side of the country.
Wild, isn't it? I mean, they got lucky that they don't have to travel out there this year, but it's honestly a favorable matchup like we talked about the other day. It's like this two-game stretch here, we could see Pitt at 3-0 in the ACC, and with the respect to Cal and Stanford and Virginia Tech too, like, could be an easy path. I mean, Pitt's 15-point favorites today. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, and the fact that they've done well at home here now. This is churning up memories of, you know, a late-day Jamie Dixon or late-day Ben Howland. They've won 13 consecutive games, I think it is, at the Pete. And I don't know what the longest streak is. You probably do, but it's 13 is very much similar to what they used to do back in their heyday when they were with the Big East Conference, and winning games at the Pete was almost automatic for them. That's a long streak, and it's something for them to continue to build on.
It is, yeah. I mean, on top of that, they've been one of the best road teams in the country over the past three years, actually. So it's not just that they're getting the job done at home. I mean, they are, and again, like we talked about earlier this year, some of those early opponents weren't the toughest in the world. But it's important to win these early season games. We've seen the other bottom-half ACC teams struggle against mid-major schools, and Pitt's got the job done so far. They're winning games by 15, 20, 30, 40 against these mid-major schools. So this seems fun to watch. I mean, it's not like they're just a boring team getting by at home. Again, like, they're blowing teams out, and they've got so many different ways to kill you. And they have a superstar. They have Jalen Lowe, who's being projected as the first-round NBA draft pick.
And that would be back-to-back years where you have those lottery picks potentially there. Jalen Lowe has been terrific. He's averaging over 16 a game. And you don't have guards that are as active in rebounding. And maybe that's a sign, a bad sign for them, given the fact that they need more inside play, I think, more consistent play inside. Guards should not be averaging – what are they averaging, like 6-7 rebounds a game each? That's a lot for guards, isn't it?
It is. It is. And Ish Leggett was actually the leading rebounder on last year's team. So it's not the worst thing in the world, I will say. But Cam Corin should be averaging more than 5 rebounds a game. He's a big, physical, athletic center. Zach Austin's helped a bit, but he's still only at 4 a game. I agree with you. I'd like to see those two above Ish Leggett and Jalen Lowe on the rebounding chart. But it's not the end of the world. I think it could be the Achilles heel of this team come March is if they can't, if they run into a physical team like Mississippi State and what's looking like the entire SEC actually now. But right now I'm not concerned about it. It's going to be interesting to see how many minutes Capel gives Papa Conte today, how many minutes Capel gives Delalich today. Because those guys are rotation guys who kind of got their shine a few games in the non-conference schedule, but they still have skills. Like, Papa Conte came in against Ohio State, which is one of Pitt's best wins on the year, and had an excellent game, scoring and rebounding. Delalich is shooting 44% from three, and that's what he was known for coming in. But it's like, how can they get him shots in these next two games before, you know, the bulk of ACC play starts?
to your point about rebounding, Pitt is 10-0 on the season when they tie or win the rebound battle in their two losses. And, you know, Mississippi State was the most glaring. They've been out-rebounded by a combined 22 boards in those losses. So you can't, you know, if you're going to, if you find a big physical team, which team in the ACC would pose that problem to them more so than others?
Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of physicality. I look to Duke. I know it's the chalk answer because they're the best team in the league, but they've got a guy, Kamon Maluak, who is an absolute stud down low. He's physical. He's long. I think he's got like a 7'4" wingspan or something. And that team has big guards. Like last year, they had Jared McCain. This year, they've got those big guards again. And that team's going to be tough. I mean, we're going to see that coming up here soon after these Stanford and Cal games. They're going to travel down to Cameron. That's going to be a real test. I think that's the most similar test that they'll have to Mississippi State. Whereas, you know, they just got walloped on the glass and overall. But I think the ACC as a whole is down this year. I don't think North Carolina has any dominant big. That's kind of been one of their issues. Austin knows this as a Tar Heel fan. No Baycott is hurting them. And it's going to be interesting, but I honestly think this is a year where Pitt can finish in the top four, top five in the ACC, even if we go into March and still seeing, you know, oh, they could rebound better, they could do this. I think they could win a lot of conference games that way. I do think Clemson, as we saw last year, can bully this team. I think that's possible. So that's a huge game coming up at home, too.
George, how big of a loss is Damian Dunn? Because, I mean, we really haven't been able to see it too much over the last stretch of games. When do you expect him to be back, and how big of an impact will it be?
Yeah, it's a huge loss. I mean, he was playing really good basketball. Not only was he their best shooter at the time of his injury, but he's just a calming presence. Like, he's that veteran. There's a reason they went out and they tried to get him twice in the transfer portal. They missed on him the first time when he went to play for Kelvin Sampson at Houston. And Capel said, like, the second we saw him go back in the portal, that was our guy. So to lose a guy like that, who's a one-year, I don't want to say rental, but a one-year grad transfer guy, it stinks. I mean, it's a huge loss. Like, this team really was built with Damian Dunn as a centerpiece, as one of the guys, as one of the backcourt leaders. And he's a physical guy. I mean, he's 6'5", 200 plus. Like, this guy could, you know, play receiver in the NFL at his size. He's a big dude. He can guard bigger guards, bigger wings. So he was playing good ball. And I know he didn't play much because of foul trouble in that first game at the Greenbrier, but he really was making a massive impact. And I think they're going to hope to get him back for those Duke and Louisville games coming up. I mean, I don't know. We got to get an update from Capel today after the game, so I'll keep you guys posted next week. But I think they're going to want to get him back for those Duke and Louisville games. No rush to get him back for Florida State. That team struggled, and they've been in the news lately. But Clemson on January 18th at home is the game I just referenced a bit ago, as that's going to be a tough game. And I think that may be the game where they're like, okay, this is past the six-week timeline for Damian Dunn. We would love to have him back for this game. Let's try to ramp him up in time for that. But, again, I don't know. He could have gotten his cast off last week. We'll find out today.
George, thanks for the time. Appreciate it. All the best in 2025 to you.
Thank you, guys. You too.
All right, that's George Michalowski from Pittsburgh Sports Now. Pitt will take on Cal today. 10-2 Pitt, 7-5 Cal. They're 0-1 in the ACC. The Panthers are 1-0, and that's a 2 p.m. tip-off with Bill Hillgrove and Curtis Aiken. We have a pregame at 1:30 as Pitt tries to go 2-0 in the ACC. Want to remind you about the 15-minute mark on the Fan. It's brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram at Route 19, Peters Township. Is it route or route? What do you say, route or route?
I say route.
Route, route, whatever. It is the 15-minute mark. That's all that matters on the Fan. Brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township. Also, listen to Pomp and Joe Show every Wednesday to hear about Joe Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 p.m. at 937thefan.com contesting page. I'm going to give you the weather right now, which is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. We have 0% financing on all 2024 Chevrolet EV models up to 16 months through January the 3rd with credit through GMC Financial. Unlike yesterday, it's not going to get into the 50s for a high temperature. Today, 37. You have a 35% chance of snow. And I know the people down at KDK TV, our meteorologist team, that's a tough word to say also, led by Ray Patlin, say that it is a first alert day. You're going to see some snow coming in. Temperatures are going to tank. And by Saturday, the high temperature only supposed to be in the low 20s for the Steelers and the Bengals.